Some days are terrible, you wish that you were dead. And some days are magical, like great banana bread. Someday we'll be friends with the voices in our heads. The voices in our heads.
Greetings, Earthlings. How you doing? Welcome to the Voices in Our Heads. Congratulations on not killing yourself, because life is tough. We chose to incarnate here. And a lot of us are like, why? Why did I do that, huh? I went rollerblading this morning, which is great. I love when I can have a morning when I rollerblade before I got to do shit. That is just the best. And all the kids, there's all these daycares in my area, my neighborhood where I live. It's Long Island City. Don't move there. It's too crowded. It's the best neighborhood in New York. But all there's all these daycares where I live because there's just so many high rises. And during a certain time in the morning, around 11, 1130, all the daycare ladies walk the kids on leashes. So there's just groups of kids and they're all wearing construction vests of a certain color so that I guess you don't lose the kid. And a lot of them can't walk. Like some of them are 2 or 3. They're fresh into walking and they just sometimes they'll see a dog and one of them will just go, dog! And then they'll all stop and then one of them will fall and then they'll all fall and they're like, ah! It's so fucking cute. And then there's the ones that can't walk yet that get pushed on an 8-kid stroller. I didn't know those were a thing, but those exist. It was the best. I almost tripped over one of the kids. One of my many favorite things about rollerblading, and I want to sell you on rollerblading. No, I'm not being sponsored by a rollerblade company. Should I be? Yes, I should. Email Mike. What's your email?
Yeah, Michael A. Coscarelli.
Michael A. Coscarelli at gmail.com. Let's get those ads. Let's get those ads, baby. I only want to advertise products that I actually use. I'll also advertise products I don't actually use, but that I support. But if it's a bad product, I'm going to go, no, thank you. Sorry, Mikey.
Fair enough.
But one of the many reasons I love rollerblading is that kids, when you rollerblade, especially past a group of kids, they look at you like you're the queen of the world. They're like, who is that lady on wheels? Her shoes have wheels. She's flying. And in my head, I'm like, yes, I am, kids. You too can be like this one day. You're going to have to work through all that childhood trauma that you're probably racking up right now. But you know what? It's going to be okay. It's going to be, we're all talking about it. You eventually get social media. Just follow the accounts on childhood trauma. You know what I mean? But yeah, it's cool. You're a hero in children's eyes when you rollerblade. I love this warm weather. Oh, I love it so much. I love rollerblading in the heat. I love running in the heat. Not too hot, but like, you know, warm. When it's warm out, I have sexual tension with a basketball. Okay? Everyone is just like hot to me. Of age, hot. I know I was just talking about kids. I don't want to, you know, I don't want anybody thinking anything weird. But yeah, I love the warm weather. And I love when it's super hot out and you rollerblade and you're like in like nothing and you're like, ooh, I look so cute. And then you're kind of stoned because you brought a joint with you. And then you have your noise-canceling headphones and you're listening to Beyonce's Cowboy Carter album, which is amazing. And you just feel on top of the world. You got your little fanny pack and your butt looks great. That's your thing. One thing about running, you lose your ass. I don't like that. Like I don't want to say this to people. I know I've said things about like weight before that people have DM'd me. I'm like, that triggered my eating disorder. Well, boo-boo, one, I'm so sorry. And two, I didn't mean to trigger you. But three, triggers are clues, okay? So they're just pointing an arrow at what you need to work on. So it is ultimately good even though you're mad at me. But you slim down so quickly with running. Like a lot of runners that I see or people I know who run, they're very little. But I'm like, that part I don't like because I'm like, no, I don't want to lose my ass. Jesus, give me my ass back. So when you rollerblade, the blades are pretty heavy. And so what you're doing is it's kind of like you're on an elliptical, but you're doing leg lifts with every, you know, with every, what's the word I'm using? Like with every
glide?
glide. Yeah. There we go. Teamwork. And so because of that, like I'm getting my butt back. Which is great. A lot of days I'll jog and rollerblade in the same fucking day because I'm a badass. And guess what? It's Fuck Shit Up May. And Fuck Shit Up May is going real good for me so far. I had some downward spirals. We'll talk about that shortly. But it's okay. And I'm already gearing up for Fuck Shit Up June. You know what I'm saying? You got to make life fun for yourself.
Every month is just going to be
Fuck Shit Up August, Fuck Shit Up July. It's all going to be Fuck Shit Up. You know, on my bulletin board, I'm just going to change out the month every month. Boy, I love a fresh start, which is apparently a coping mechanism of self-sabotage. Oops, we'll get to that later. Okay, guys, I would like to take this time. I've been a very bad podcast host because sometimes I'm not really good at promoting myself. And by sometimes, I mean a lot of time, which Brianna Weiss has told me is a form of self-sabotage, to which I say, fuck you, respectfully, but fuck, you're right. Could you rate and review The Voices in Our Heads on iTunes podcast app, please? And SoundCloud. We're not on SoundCloud, but aw, that was, remember SoundCloud?
Sure do.
Yeah. That's for the original Guys We Fucked host. Yeah. Spotify as well. Wherever you get your podcasts, wherever you're listening to this, I would really appreciate it if you gave me a high review. I remember Corinne said to me once, we're not allowed to ask for a certain number of stars, but you know how many stars I want. All of them. Okay. Yeah. If you have anything less than that, take your review to the mail and mail me at P.O. Box 1926, New York, New York, 10156. Christina Hutchinson. That is my P.O. Box. You can send me mail and I'll read it and I'll respond. Maybe won't. But yeah, if you wouldn't mind taking the time to rate and review, oh God, I'll be so happy. And oh, I should probably do a thing where you're like, I'll read the rate and reviews, or I'll send you something free. I don't really got anything, but I'll think of that next week.
Yeah.
Just and fucking also, rate and review.
You're on YouTube now.
Oh, yes. We have full episodes of the podcast available on youtube.com/slickbackstudios.
Correct.
Oh,
yes.
I got it right.
That's right.
Someone's smart. Someone went to school. Yeah. So there's full episodes. A couple of the episodes are up. There are going to be more being uploaded as the days pass. So
it only took 7 months.
It's all right.
Eventually, we got there.
Yeah. Brianna said, don't downplay yourself, Michael. Yeah, don't downplay your success. So please rate and review and subscribe to Slickback Studios and follow me on Instagram, because I've been plateauing at 114,000. That's why I took her first 100K's workshop, which was fantastic. And I've been implementing the little tricks and tips that she taught me. But every week it's like 900 people will follow me and then 903 people will unfollow me. And I'm like, what'd I do? What did I do? Although I will say, Instagram unfollows motherfuckers on your behalf when you are not choosing to unfollow them, because I cannot tell you how many people that I know very well have been very upset with me that I'm just not following them all of a sudden. And they're like, are you mad at me? Oh God. I don't ever want anybody to feel that, because I hate when I feel that towards somebody. No, I'm not mad at you. I didn't unfollow you. Mark Zuckerberg, loser person, did. Fucking bitch. Stop doing that, Mark. Okay. So my friend Donna Guerreros and I, we attended a workshop of an author, a channeler. So your girl loves the woo-woo stuff. And channeling is a very fascinating gift. I don't really know if you can do it on purpose. I know this woman kind of discovered this on accident, and a lot of the other channels that I've had the privilege to meet have also kind of discovered them on accident. There's a really famous book called Seth Speaks, where this woman just channeled this entity one day from another universe, I think. And so it's this entity or a group of people. But I once saw Esther Hicks. Esther Hicks, who channels an entity that they call Abraham Hicks. And Esther and her husband, her late husband, rest in peace, Jerry Hicks, they would tour the country for the last several decades and do talks. Their talks are just Q&As. And I've read Abraham Hicks books, God, for the past 10 years. This is one of the, my uncle had turned me on to them. And I really loved the message that it was saying. And it was just all about how to get in your zone. And I found the lessons very valuable. My friend Donna was like, oh, do you want to go? You want to come with me to see her live in Tarrytown, New York? And I was like, I never thought I'd have an opportunity to see her live. Yeah, goddamn, yes, I do. Donna, thanks for asking me, bitch. And I wasn't sure how it was going to be. Because as much as I love to believe in the most unbelievable things, I really, really do. I love aliens. I love talking to dead people. I love psychic abilities. I'm just so, these topics light me up in a way that I, not much else does. Comedy is the only other thing that lights me up like this. And so I want to believe that all this is true, but I'm very open to it not being true. And I'm also extremely aware of, like, am I stepping into a cult? You know, I always ask myself that. especially if I get too excited about something. I'm like, Christina, let's take a look at your history. And it's not, you tend to put things on pedestals that shouldn't be on there, because nothing should be on a pedestal except for you. Yes, that's very brave of me to say and very true. So I walked into the Esther Hicks workshop with Donna, and I was like, oh, okay, they were playing a song, and the song was just this lady singing, I can do it. I can do it. I'm like, this is a fucking cult, isn't it? I don't know how I'm going to feel about this. And then I was like, I looked around, because I'm like, if it's only white people, I'm not going to trust the goddamn word she says. No, I don't know. Whenever I walk into a room for like a thing, an event or anything, if it's all white people, it's not good usually. It's usually not good. Okay. There's got to be some diversity in the room, because I'm like, ugh, white people be falling for shit and thinking shit is like legit when it's not. And just in giant groups, in throngs, white people are just like, let's pay attention to this guy. He's telling us to drink poison. Okay. All right, kids, drink up. White people be dumb sometimes, as we all know. So it was not just white people. And I was like, yay, okay, I can take stuff a little bit more seriously. So that was good. The crowd was lovely, like really lovely. Because sometimes I'll go to workshops, like Laura Lynn Jackson. That's a legit lady. Woo! I'm going to another one of her 90-person readings in June. I'm so excited. I cannot fucking tell you how excited I am for that. And sometimes I'll be at these spiritual workshops and there'll be people, mostly white, older white ladies, that are like, hey, I'm great. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, I don't like this energy. So yeah, it was not that, which was great. And the whole 2-3 hours. Yeah, it was 3 to 5. No, 1 to 5. So it's 4 hours. For the whole 4 hours, there was 3 breaks, but it was Esther Hicks channeling Abraham, the entity. And it was just Q&A the whole time. So people were coming up, sitting in the chair and asking questions. It was so cute. People were so excited to meet her and to have a chance to talk to Abraham, which I'm like, that's so fucking cool. And I'm so happy for them. And I raised my hand, but like, your girl, like everybody was asking questions the entire 4 hours about, how do I get what I want? Like, where am I being blocked? You know, how do I attract this? Or I'm really in a dark place. How do I get out of it and stuff? And the answers were really, her answers were super beautiful. And I'll share some pieces of advice. I took notes throughout the whole thing. So I'll give you some of my notes that I really loved. And really intense stuff. But I was raising my hand because I was like, I don't think anybody's ever asked her this, because everyone's like, how do I get money? How do I meet the love of my life? How do I, you know, get stuff for myself? I'm like, I already know how that, like, energetically, I get how you do it. And I get that I still got work to do on that, but I already know, you know, I want to get in that hot seat and be like, hey, Esther, hey, Abraham, yo, what's up? All right. So real talk, aliens. I love them. I know they're real. I just want confirmation from you that they're real. That would be really exciting. And can you tell me how to talk to them? And everyone in the workshop would be so pissed at me, because they're like, we want to know how to make more money and how to not be so sad and poor. But I'm like, yeah, but also we could learn about aliens, guys. I'm glad she didn't call on me, because I feel like people would have been annoyed or pissed. There was one of the most beautiful questions was the very last one. This woman got on stage. You could tell she's been through a lot. I just felt like, oh, I want to hug you. And she was so excited to be, you know, to be picked and to go in the seat. And this was a conference room in a Marriott hotel, probably like thousands of people. It was huge. Okay. It was huge. And she was talking about her business and how her business goals kind of fell off. And then eventually she was said, you know, I met the love of my life in 2010 or something. And together we had 8 kids. We combined our families. I had 4, he had 4. And it was beautiful. He was helping me with my work. And then he died. Tragically. And she was like, I haven't been able to pick myself up since then. And she just broke down. And it was so human. And Esther, I know, recently lost her husband, Jerry. And I remember when I read about that, I was like, dude, that's gotta be so tough, because he's your best friend. He's your partner. And Jerry was just a beautiful human being, super sweet and really determined to make every interaction that he had with anybody valuable and to leave people better than he found them. He's like, I always want people's vibration to be raised after they speak to me, never lowered. And he was just a beautiful person. And I couldn't imagine like the epicness of that loss for her must have been tough. And so I was like, oh shit, I wonder if she's gonna cry or, you know, be remembered about Jerry. And she brought Jerry up, but she said things that I already knew to be true, but it was really cool to hear her say that. Like, I know it doesn't help when you're grieving to say he's with you. I know that. I know it doesn't help because you still don't see him and your body is not used to this like different way of him being around you. But she was saying how after Jerry died, as close as we were, he would blink the lights. He would make doors open and close. It was so cool. He would give me signs everywhere I went. And we somehow ended up having a deeper relationship after his passing. And I just fucking lost it. I was like, oh God, it's so beautiful. We're all just here trying to be loved and we want to love and we want to receive love. And his life is hard, man. You got to do a shit like that. And it was just so, so beautiful. So here's some quotes that I took down. Follow your, these are things that Abraham said, follow your anticipation. Keep your anticipation alive. Be general about timing when you want to manifest stuff. Less urgency and more anticipation. She was saying that urgency has a very specific feeling in your body. Anticipation has a different feeling in your body. You want to lean in towards the anticipation. She says, when you reach a stagnant place, stop trying and have fun. And I'm like, well, I can get behind that, bitch. That's my motto every day. That's my motto every day. I feel stagnant. I'm going to go rollerblade, smoke a little weed. One mantra that she kept saying over and over again. I love this mantra. Mantras are amazing. You should say them out loud to yourself every morning. The ones that resonate with you, I highly encourage you to say out loud. I've been doing mantras forever. They've helped me. I credit a lot of my success with them, of like just being focused enough to like maintain that all along my career. But the mantra that she said was, things are always working out for me. Isn't that nice? Things are always working out for me. And guess what? Things are always working out for you too, boo. You might be going, no, Christina, I just lost my job. Hey, that's a miracle. You don't know what the miracle is yet, probably. Okay? Most likely. Hopefully it's not something too bad. If it's something tragic, I don't want to imply that that's working out. Because it's not. But it will eventually work out for you. I promise. But things are always working out for me. I love that for us. Allow your vibration to rise because of the pleasure of it. Meditate for the pleasure of it, not for the responsibility of it. I loved that, because the second I say I should, or I got to already meditate, it's like, then don't meditate today. Today's not the day you meditate, because you just feel too pressured to do it and you're going to ruin it. You dumb bitch. Alignment is delicious. Responsibility is edgy. Hit me again, Esther. Alignment is delicious. Responsibility is edgy, meaning a negative. Like when you feel a sense of responsibility to do things, and I understand there could be upsides to responsibility. It can feel great to have certain responsibilities, but it's a more edgy feeling, a more edgy vibration. And it's all about all these self-help people that I read and that I talk about, they all say the same thing, which is super helpful, because they say it in a different way because their lives are different. And it's so helpful to hear 100 different times how to do the same thing, which is just constantly getting yourself to a place where you're feeling good. That's it. That's how you attract good shit, okay? And if you're in a place where you're not feeling good, don't try to go from shame on the emotional scale immediately to joy. That's not how it works. You got to go up the ladder slowly. And your girl loves a quick fix. Your girl loves super, super speedy, but some shit you can't be fast at. And I wish that wasn't the case, but it is. Okay. Most humans calibrate what's going on around them. And that's one of the biggest causes of resistance. So if you, like a government and stuff, like if you're, that's why I don't watch the news too much. I can't do it, because now I'm calibrating to like these awful stories, which are awful. The corruption of the government and all these companies and all the colleges, and they don't really give a shit about you being educated. They just want money. And so that's one of the reasons why I try to not take in that stuff. You got to be very careful about what you take in. I feel very good about you taking this podcast in. And you should rate and review us on iTunes and Spotify and your mom's house. Be in a state of appreciation. That's one of the highest states you can be in vibrationally. And just one of the quickest ways that you can be like, oh, I want to like change how I feel right now because I don't like it. Stop. It's going to feel corny. Who gives a shit? You know what I mean? Just do it. But stop and go, okay, what are three things that I'm genuinely super thankful to have or to be able to experience, you know, or things that I like about myself? Don't decide you're going to do something no matter what. This one was interesting. You might get downloads to do something better than what you're asking for. So I was like, okay, shit. That's why every time I went home right after that workshop, John and I went home and I did a vision board right away. Oh, it was awesome. It was fucking awesome. I got specific, but then I was like, this or like something like way more, or like something like way better. Do you know what I mean? All right, guys, you know what time it is? Do you know what fucking time it is? It's time for some fuckboy theater. Okay. My titties are popping today. They look great, but I wore a bra that's makes them pop a little less because I'm trying to be respectful. Okay. Thank you for buying tickets to today's Fuckboy Theater. You are about to hear some works from a fuckboy named Zach. Just a piece of shit named Zach who probably has sexual intercourse with his fishing pole on the dock in the middle of the day while the children are vacationing. Because that's the kind of guy Zach is. Maybe not. Maybe Zach's great. We'll see. All right. This is a conversation on a dating app on Bumble between a lovely woman who's probably just amazing and beautiful and compassionate and kind and has never done many bad things in her life and a piece of shit named Zach. Okay. Okay, so Bumble, the lady has to go first, which I love, but then some guys ruin it. So the girl says, "Hi, you're cute, upside down smiley face."
"Haha, thanks. Not bad yourself, winky face. Bet I can touch the inside of your belly button from the inside."
Wow. Okay, the next one is a conversation with a lady and some just absolute monster shit show named Jeff. So the girl invited Jeff to start the chat. And then Jeff says,
"Hey, April, are you a tent? Because I'm going to mess around with you in the dark and put my pole in all the wrong places until I get frustrated and cry. Ha, 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 ha. Love that one. Good morning."
No, Jeff. Shut the fuck up, Jeff. Jeff, shut the fuck up, okay? All right, and the final conversation is with a lady who's just so giving and lovely and kind and just an absolute ass trash named Noah. Okay, they match on this dating app, and in the app, Noah says,
"Boarding."
She says,
"Good morning, sun emoji.
How are you doing, sexy? Hun."
And then she doesn't respond to that. So an hour later, he goes,
"You want your hair pulled?"
And scene. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. I got a BFA in acting. Isn't that exciting? Dude, Colin, my boyfriend Colin, he managed to single-handedly ruin the Red Hot Chili Peppers for me. I can't listen to them anymore because one day he pointed out that their lyrics are trash. Like the Red Hot Chili Pepper lyrics are all, they mean nothing. Like they're literally, it's like a kindergartner just barfing words and then you sing them.
They're not all like
okay. Red Hot
I don't disagree,
chili.
But I mean.
But every time I was rollerblading and I was like, and then the, I'm like, oh, let's go. And I'm like, yeah. These fucking lyrics
they're
suck.
They're a vibe band.
But like, their lyrics are so meaningless that it's not like I need meaning in my, like, I can't just survive a song on a good bass line and good drums. I mean, it's great, but it's like when you disrespect the beautiful music you just wrote with shit lyrics that came out of a toddler's butt.
Well, Give It Away is about River Phoenix, at least.
Ooh.
There's a friend who died, but.
Okay. Give It Away.
Yeah.
Let's read those lyrics.
Give it away. Give it away. Give it away.
Give what away? Give River Phoenix away, God? I mean, that's what happened.
Well, there's that lyric. There's a river born to be a giver.
Okay.
Blah, blah, blah. But yeah, you're right.
What I've got, you got it. What I've got, you got to give it to your mama. What I've got, you've got to give it to your papa. What I've got, you've got to give it to your daughter. I don't know. I don't like that, sir. You do a little dance and then you drink a little water. What? What does that fucking mean? Realize I don't want to be a miser. Confide with sly. You'll be the wiser. Young blood is the loving upriser. You, how come everybody want to keep it like the Kaiser? I mean, okay, I get that these have some meaning. Greedy little people in a sea of distress keep you more to receive. Keep your more to receive your less. Well, okay, that's pretty poetic. Unimpressed by material excess, love is free. Love me, say hell yes. Lowbrow, but I rock a little know-how. No time for the piggies or the hoosegow. Get smart. Get down with the powwow. Never been a better time than right now. So I'm not moved. Bob Marley, poet and prophet. Bob Marley taught me how to off it. Like, kill yourself? Bob Marley, walking like he talk it. That's walking like I talk it. That's not your lyric.
But Christina, don't you, while you're saying this, don't you kind of like hear it in your head and the vibe? I don't love the Red Hot Chili Peppers, but I get their
thing. The thing is, I love their music so much. Like, because the bass and the drum,
it's the
vibe. Yeah. But the lyrics are so not a vibe.
Yeah.
That I'm like, why won't you make the lyrics a little bit more of a vibe?
Okay.
Red Hot Chili Pepper lyrics. But what's the one? That's just so fucking random. Which one? Californication. This is dumb.
There's a lot
psychic spies from China try to steal your mind's elation, and little girls from Sweden dream of silver screen quotation. And if you want these kind of dreams, it's Californication. It's the edge of the world and all of Western civilization. Because I fucking love this song. The sun may rise in the east. At least it's settled in a final location. It feels like he gives up. Pay your surgeon very well to break the spell of aging. Okay, well, this is actually pretty poetic. All right, maybe I take my point back. Wait, what's the fuck? There was one song that I'm like, he literally is just saying dumb shit. Hold on.
Can't stop?
Maybe. Hold on. Red Hot. Hot.
Can't stop. Addicted to the shindig.
Under the scar tissue.
Scar
tissue. Oh, yeah. That's a fucking random ass one. Oh, wait. Hold on. Scar tissue. Give me the lyrics. No, not about the artist. I want the lyrics, you fuck. Okay, scar tissue that I wish you saw. Sarcastic Mr. Know-It-All. Close your eyes and I'll kiss you, because with the birds I'll share. With the birds I'll share this lonely viewing. With the birds I'll share this lonely viewing. Push me up against the wall. Young Kentucky girl in a push-up bra. Ah, falling all over myself to lick your heart and taste your health. Okay, that's kind of hot. Because with the birds I'll share this lonely viewing. Blood loss in a bathroom stall. Southern girl with a scarlet draw. Wave goodbye to mom, pa, because with the birds I'll share. I don't know. I just...
With the birds I'll share.
They're still a good song, but I'm like, the lyrics are... She's just saying shit.
I'll tell you what you accomplished today, though. You got me in the mood to listen to the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Hey, and that's great. That's beautiful, because I don't want to shit on them. I just, for some reason, thought there was much more meaning behind the lyrics. I never paused to go, what's he saying? And then I read them, and I was like, this... the fuck is this shit?
Yeah.
But anyway, okay, so I was gonna, before I get to this fucking self-sabotage, so this is coming out on Monday, the day after Mother's Day. Is like, I had one, since I stopped speaking to my parents, one Mother's Day where I was like, oh, okay, I'm okay, but then all of them after that have been awful. Like, really talk about a trigger. And one of the awful parts is just like, there's this thing of like, I have not regret, because it's not anybody's doing, but I can't help. I was sad for 2 days because I walked into a CVS a couple days ago and there was all these Mother's Day balloons and there's all these Mother's Day cards. And I was trying to channel this pain that I was experiencing into art, right? And I ended up filming with Haley how to look hot on Mother's Day when you're estranged from your mother. So that's on my Instagram right now. I released it on Mother's Day, and which I love. That was like the perfect. And then I'm like, oh, she's going to see this and fucking get mad and think I'm like, ugh. But I'm like, no, Christina, stop. She's always going to make you feel like you expressing your feelings about a situation you went through is awful. Like, you're an awful daughter. You're an awful person for doing that. And you just have to like be okay with the fact that you're expressing these things. And I am. I really am. But yeah, I was sad for two days, and I just started piling on myself. And the thing that made me the most sad, the thought, was so a lot of times my brain feels broken. Like, I can't function in the way that I know I optimally could. And the past 5 years of my life, I've just been kind of trying to figure myself out, undo the trauma shit, and then get these habits and hobbies in my life that will enrich my life and make me happier and make me do my job to the best of its ability and make me the best comedian I can be and all this shit. But I couldn't help but wonder, Carrie Bradshaw moment here. I couldn't help but wonder how much farther I would be in my life and all the fuck ups that, and I understand there's things that are illogical about this thought, but this is the thought. I gotta share it with you. How much farther along I would be, how self-assured I would be if I got the nurturing and the love that I so desperately needed. And how I would be able to think faster on my feet. And when I'm in a stressful situation, I won't crumble. And I won't feel like I'm being ripped into a million pieces every time something goes wrong. And I won't be so afraid of success and all these things. I'm like, man, when I meet people who have super loving, nurturing mothers, I'm just like, oh, man. I wanted one of those. But I do believe, and I do really honestly believe this, that we pick our parents before we get here to learn certain lessons. And there's been many times where I've been at a wedding and I've seen like a father-daughter dance or mother-son dance. And I'm just, you know, I get a little upset and I go, Christina, this lifetime, as when you're Christina Marie Hutchinson, this time around, it's just a little blip on the radar. Christina's life, just a little tiny blip on the radar, baby. That's why I'm trying to make these podcasts, to live forever. You know, you didn't choose loving parents this life to learn certain lessons. And that genuinely makes me feel good. And it makes me feel like, okay, this is not a situation that's out of my control. And I always get so hesitant to allow myself to feel victimized by my circumstances. I feel like it's a dangerous, slippery slope. But I realize that I am so, don't be the victim, don't be the victim. It's so disgusting when people victimize themselves. I fucking hate it. And this is obviously excluding someone who is the legit victim of a terrible situation, a crime, a sexual assault, all that stuff. Obviously, that's different. But a lot of people victimize themselves, and it's a quality that I cannot fucking stand in another human being. I am allergic to it, but it's because of my mom. It's because of you know, the things that I saw her do and how she behaved. And God bless her. I love her. But the victimization thing was super manipulative, and I felt bad for her in times where, now that I'm older and wiser and have done all the work on myself, I'm like, you guilt tripped a fucking kid, dude? Come on. But now I can also take a step back and go, she didn't know any better. Like, we do the best we can with what we have. And I do believe that. And there's this, you know, thought of like, her biological mother was far worse to her and her siblings than my mother was to me and my brother. My God. I mean, light years. And so that's beautiful. Like, how like in two generations it can improve. Something can improve that much is amazing. It's beautiful. And I still, like, I feel like I want to give my mom her flowers for dealing with all the shit she had to deal with. And at the same time, realize that and accept that for my inner peace to be sustained at this moment in time, we can't be in each other's lives. I wish that wasn't the case. But, the past 2 days, I was just in a rut because I kept just getting pissed off about how much farther along I would be in the world and in life. Because, look, I have big dreams and big goals, and I always have. And the second I achieve a dream, it's so exciting. And I'm like, all right, what's the fucking next dream that we're going to go after? But I'm like, what if I could have been a billionaire if I was like loved the right way? You know what I mean? Because I see a lot of people in my life that have parents that are so beautiful, like the lessons they teach and the way they're gentle and kind and curious about their child. And I see the effect on the child as a grown adult now of like how they function in the world. That's why, like, Mike, I've always asked you, I'm like, how the fuck did you not freak out more about like your circumstances of sharing the room, of like not needing, like, and how, like, when you were stressed about the studio and the money and you're like, well, I don't know if I can pay rent this month, but that would have made me feel like such a failure, incorrectly make me feel like a failure because I have this fucking perfectionist bullshit thing. But then I the way that you were parented had been slowly revealed. And I'm like, dude, that's fucking amazing. And what that does is in a child, it builds endurance. It builds self-esteem. And when you are up against adversity, which everybody will be in their life, you have this foundation in yourself that was instilled in you so early on, because our early relationships are so fucking important, that you are loved and that you are capable.
Yeah. Well, I will say that the with my parents specifically, I do think the way that I was raised, there was like a toughness sort of instilled.
Sure.
Because I didn't grow up around a lot of like success by the traditional definition.
Yeah.
But I grew up around a lot of people that were just like making it work constantly. And I think that was the example that I saw. My mom was in college when I was a kid. And she had kind of done.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
She had like tried a year at this school and that school, like in Brooklyn. I think she went to Brooklyn College for like a semester or something. But she just kind of like, she never really finished until she had three kids.
Mm.
So, like, the example that you see is that your mom is just like getting it done. Same thing with my dad. Like, my dad, for a lot of my childhood, had two different jobs. So, I think when you grow up in a situation like that and you start to understand as an adult, like, all right, I take on a little debt and like work, but and nothing happens overnight. I have that perfectionist stuff too, which is makes this all very difficult because you want everything, even the studio, you want everything to be perfect out of the gate.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the truth is that you start to hunker down and realize that, like, well, how long did it take for my parents to get us out of like a two bedroom apartment?
Yeah.
I was 14. You know? And I shared a room with my sisters until then. And it was just like, that's just what it was until there's an acceptance, I think, of this is just what it is.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Like, succumb to the process.
Yeah.
And once you do, it can put you in a state of not relaxation, but like ability to cope.
Yes. With, and that my
I'm in trouble, but I'll get out of it.
Yes. Know? And I think one of the greatest, the biggest thing that was damaged in me, in my mind, in my heart, in my soul, is my ability to cope.
Yeah.
It is
because your mom would freak, right?
I mean, freak in a way that was illogical, that was scary, that didn't make sense, and in a way that I internalized. And then that, you know, that's just what happened. That's not like they didn't want that to happen. I know they didn't. And so my ability to cope, and you know, my whole life, all my friends, my boyfriends throughout my life have always been like, you are so sensitive. And I'm really sensitive, but under what they're saying is also this, I think, implication that like you gotta learn to handle yourself a little better, which they are absolutely correct. And when I don't handle myself in the way that I want, I get so ashamed, which is not helpful. It's just not helpful.
Can I tell you something real quick?
Yeah.
So just like a testament to my mom being kind of like a pick yourself up and go do what you have, handle your business type of person.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was the first time I was really having like a bad episode of depression and was kind of suicidal and all that stuff, I think I was about 22, 23 at the time. I remember telling my mom, I was like laying around the house. I didn't have I was like in between jobs. I was a real mess. And I remember telling my mom that I was so depressed that I wanted to kill myself, that I was like thinking of that. And I was just like, I don't want to keep going or whatever. I was so young. And my mom made me get up and she's like, if you're sure that's what you want to do, like, okay, that's fine. And she goes to the listeners that don't know, my sister Nicole has Down syndrome. She goes, go talk to your sister and tell her why you're going to be dead. And tell her why you're not going to be with us anymore because you just, like, kind of can't go on. And that really, That really put good things job, in perspective.
Mother Coscarelli, good fucking job.
It's just these things where it was just like this upbringing of like, you got a problem, you got to deal with it. Like,
yeah.
It's not going to go away if, unless you like face
yeah.
it.
And that, yeah, that's beautiful. And that's such a, that's so poignant. That's a, that was a great lesson that she taught you, that she didn't have to say a lot of words and you understood it right away. My, one of the things with growing up is I was suicidal when I was 11, but like the last person I would ever tell, well, I would never tell anybody because I thought my feelings were an absolute burden to everybody, is my mother, because I like, she's going to be worried about me. I don't want her to think she's a bad parent. I was so fucking stressed out by doing a song and dance so that my mom didn't think she was a bad mom that none of my energy went to myself. None of it. I did have fun. I was allowed to like, I immersed myself in my imagination plenty of times as a child. And there were certainly more good things than bad things, like if we're stacking them up against each other, but the bad things got so ingrained in me. And so my point is, so I have these two friends in my life that I love so much. One is this woman, Jordan, who is one of the most special people I've ever met. I'm going to be interviewing her on the podcast, on the Voices in Our Heads, I think at the end of the summer, in the fall. I'm very excited. She's much younger than me. She's in her 20s. She has the wisdom of a fucking guru. I have never met anybody like her. Her positivity is contagious, and her creativity and her belief in herself and her confidence, her boundaries are crazy intact. It's beautiful. The way she navigates her life is a masterclass, and she writes children's books. You should follow her, Planet Butter. It's Planit, Butter, Butter. I highly recommend it. I mean, you'll hear more from her in a couple months. But we do these Zooms every other week. She's living in Bali at the moment because she's like, I don't fucking live in Bali. Well, I can work anywhere. I'm like, fucking good for you. And I watch her manifest things or attract things that I'm like, that is what? Like every time I talk to her, I'm like, what the fuck? What cool, exciting shit happened to you this week? And she'll be like, this, this, this. I'm like, that's so fucking cool. So we talk every 2 weeks. And just creatively brainstorm with each other. Like she'll tell me about projects she's working on. I'll give her ideas and then I'll do that with mine. And it's great. We do it because we want to. And so I was like, you know, telling her about certain projects, the book that I'm working on and stuff I'm really excited about. But I was like, man, I was telling her about this near-death experience video that I watched that was really poignant. The NDE of Penny Whitbrot, which is WITTBROD. I'll put this in the description of the podcast so that if you're driving or whatever, you don't gotta, you know, freak out to write it down. I highly recommend looking up this name on YouTube and watch it. It's an hour long, one of the most amazing near-death experience interviews I've ever seen. There's so many poignant lessons that I learned from Penny's experience. One, she was a nurse, and she, in her life review when she was dead, she was brought back to early nursing school, and there was this nurse that she did not have a high opinion of because this nurse was super gossipy, and she kept that to herself. Penny was like, I'm not gonna go up and be like, why are you gossiping, bitch? Like, she's like, I kept it to myself, I didn't say anything. But she was taken to this she was, you know, being made aware that Penny thought she was a better person because she kept her opinion about this gossipy nurse in. And then Penny was shown images from this woman's childhood where she suffered extreme sexual abuse at the hands of her own father. And Penny goes, holy shit. She didn't say shit, but she's like, I was judging this person and I didn't think, like, I learned I had to work on something I didn't even fucking think I had to work on. And I'm like, I would have never like looked back at this moment and gone, this is where you could have improved on that. I'm like, I handled that well. I didn't say anything to the nurse lady who was gossipy as shit. But she was shown an image of this woman's childhood and how it was super fucking traumatic. And the woman started crying in the interview. I was crying on my couch. I'm like, this is so fucking beautiful. And she's like, the entity that was kind of showing her this life review was like, control your thoughts more, because thoughts have energy. And you having this energy towards that nurse about like, ooh, she's gossipy, I don't like that. You don't know why she's like that. She went through extreme circumstances at a very young age at the hands of the people that were supposed to love and protect her. And she chose to be a nurse with her life. She chose to go into a caring position. Okay, cool. She fucking gossips. What? You know? And I'm like, I'll never fucking forget that. So I was telling Jordan about this, and I was like, I'm not mad. I'm like, I'm really fucked up with the Mother's Day thing and like seeing all these kids with moms that like, it's so hard for me to not be like, oh, why didn't I get a fucking nurturing mom? And Jordan, just in the, she knows me very well. We've worked together for many years and I love her. I love her energy. And she was like, she started kind of tearing up and she said something that completely made me break down and cry in the best possible way, but it released something in me. She goes, what happened to you was really sad. And it's okay to be sad. Be sad. It's sad. And I was like, oh, fuck. That, I was masking my sadness with anger. Anger is usually a secondary emotion. And I was like, I'm not, I know I'm not mad at my mom. And I'm like, and I was talking it out. I'm like, am I, God, am I mad at God? Like that's fucked up. I know people can arrive at that place of being mad at God and that's fine. Like, but I'm like, that's not, I know that's not right. Like I'm not channeling the anger of the right person if I'm mad at God. And, but she was like, it's okay to cry because what you went through was really sad. And I was just like, oh God. And it was the best release. Oh, it was fucking incredible. So thank you, Jordan. And please follow her, Planet Butter, PLANIT. And look up that Penny Whitbread fucking NDE. It's amazing. All right. So we have a little less than 15 minutes. So I'm going to get through as much as I can of chapter two of The Mountain Is You, Bitch. I had a bitch. Transforming self-sabotage into self-mastery. This chapter going to fuck you up. It's going to fuck me up. And as you're listening to this, I'm only reading some sections of chapter two. Chapter two is a long one. The title of it is There's No Such Thing as Self-Sabotage. And then you might be going, what? If you want to hear me read the rest of this chapter, it is available on my Patreon, patreon.com/Christina Hutchinson. It's a great way to support me and support the show. There's a $5 a month level where you could just listen to all the shit I post, this reading included. And I would really very much appreciate it, okay? All right, what is self-sabotage? Self-sabotage is when you have two conflicting desires. One is conscious, one is unconscious. You know how you want to move your life forward, and yet you are still, for some reason, stuck. When you have a big, ongoing, insurmountable issue in your life, especially when the solutions seem so simple, so easy, and yet so impossible to stick with, what you have are not big problems, but big attachments. People are pretty incredible in the fact that they basically do whatever they want to do. Goddamn right, Brianna. This is true of everything in human life. Regardless of the potential consequences, human nature has revealed itself to be incredibly self-serving. People have an almost superhuman way of doing whatever they feel compelled to do, regardless of whom it could hurt, what wars it could spawn. Well, here's looking at you, Vladimir. Or what future would be put at risk. When you consider this, you begin to realize that if you're keeping something in your life, there has to be a reason you want it there. The only question is, why? Some people can't figure out why they can't seem to motivate themselves enough to create a new business, to facilitate their goal of becoming significantly wealthier. Perhaps not realizing that they have a subconscious belief that to be rich is to be egocentric or disliked. Maybe it's a cover-up for wanting to feel insecure and taken care of. Or their real desire is to be recognized for their art. And as this feels too unlikely to ever happen, well, those with that fucking attitude, they fall back on a secondary dream that doesn't actually motivate them. Some people say that they want to be successful at any cost, yet don't want to log the hours of work it would take to get there. Perhaps it is because they understand that at some level, being successful doesn't really make you happy or liked. In fact, the opposite tends to be true. Success usually exposes you to jealousy and scrutiny. Successful people are not loved in the way that we imagine they would be. They are usually picked apart because envious people need to humanize them in some way. Perhaps instead of being successful, what many really want is to just be loved. Yet their ambition for success directly threatens that. Ooh, that hurts. What does self-sabotage look like? Me, your girl. It's impossible to say decisively what self-sabotage does or does not look like, because certain habits and behaviors that can be healthy for one person can be unhealthy for another context. With that said, there are definitely some specific behaviors and patterns that are typically indicative of self-sabotage, and they usually relate to being aware that there's a problem in your life, yet feeling the need to perpetuate it regardless. Oh, just sing to me, songbird. Here are some of the main signs that you're probably in a cycle of self-sabotage. Your name is Christina Hutchinson. No, I'm just kidding. Resistance is one of them. I'm not going to read that. Okay, so here, there's the rest of the chapter is just all these signs that you could be in self-sabotage. I'm just going to read a couple for time. I love this one. Hitting your upper limit. As discussed before, there's only a certain amount of happiness that most of us will allow ourselves to feel. Gay Hendricks calls this your upper limit. Your upper limit is essentially the amount of good that you're comfortable having in your life. It is your tolerance and threshold for having positive feelings or experiencing positive events. So if you grew up in a chaotic household, your brain is wired for comfort and familiarity, okay? So it makes all the sense in the world that you are going to, if you saw your dad beat your mom, it makes sense that you pick a partner that does the same thing to you. It's not good. It's not, and it does, of course, is not the way that it has to go. And it's not the way it always goes at all. But if you find yourself in that situation and you go, this is the one thing I knew I didn't want, I would highly suggest going inside, interrogating yourself and going, is this because it's comfortable? You know? But then I want to read, I don't have much time, but I want to read, limited emotional processing skills could be a reason for self-sabotage. In life, there are going to be people, situations, and circumstances that are upsetting, infuriating, saddening, and even enraging. There will likewise be people, situations, and circumstances that are inspiring, hopeful, helpful, and truly offer purpose and meaning in your life. When you are only able to process half of your emotions, oh, this feels personal, you stunt yourself. You have no shit, Brianna. You start going out of your way to avoid any possible situation that could bring up something frustrating or uncomfortable because you have no tools to be able to handle that feeling. This means that you start avoiding the very risks and actions that would ultimately change your life for the better. In addition, an inability to process your emotions means you get stuck with them. You sit and dwell on your anger and sadness because you don't know how to make them go away. When we can only process half of our emotions, we ultimately only live half the life we really want to. And then finally, oh, this one hurts. This is another example of how we self-sabotage this one fucking... Being busy. Everybody in my life's like, all right, you're busy, right? I know you're busy. Because I'm always like, I'm so busy. Don't call me. I'm busy. Shut the fuck up, Christina. Another very common way that people sabotage is by distracting themselves to the point of being completely phased out of their lives.
I do that.
Exhibit A.
Exhibit B, C, D, F, G, H, I, J, K, M, O,
P. How good these shots look.
Yeah, they look fucking fantastic. People who are constantly busy are running from themselves. Okay. Nobody is busy unless they want to be busy. And you will know that because so many people with extremely hectic schedules would never describe themselves that way. Fuck you, man. Respectfully, that's very true. This is because being busy is not a virtue. It only signals to others that you do not know how to manage your time or your tasks. This hurts so bad. Being busy communicates importance. Call me out more, bitch. Call me out more. Being busy communicates importance. It often makes you seem a little untouchable to others. It also overwhelms the body so that it can only focus on the tasks at hand. Being busy is the ultimate way to distract ourselves from what's really wrong. How to resolve this? If your schedule is unmanageable, you're never going to be as effective or productive as you could be. If this is the case, your first job has to be to streamline and prioritize your tasks in order of importance. Outsource whatever else you can and then let go of all the rest. And wait, I want to just read. We have a couple minutes, right? Mm-hmm. Where's the perfectionism? Because you were just talking about that. And I'm like, oh, I got some words for you from Brianna about perfectionism. Oh, unhealthy habits. That hurts. Fear of failing. Fuck you. Guilt of succeeding. Pride. Judging others, check, 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 check. Attachments you don't really want, check, check, check. Disorganization, I'm organized as hell. Okay, I don't know where this is. How many minutes do I have? Seven. There's one, spending time with the wrong people, worrying about irrational fears. Ooh, this is a good one for you, Mikey. Worrying about irrational fears and least likely circumstances. Another very common way people sabotage without realizing is by preoccupying themselves with fears of worst case scenarios. This is super poignant. You're probably familiar with this, at least to some degree. You have a weird or highly unlikely thought that evokes a deep sense of dread, fear, a series of doomsday scenarios in your head. You then keep coming back to it to the point that it even controls some parts of your life. Mm. Irrational fears, especially the kind that are least likely to become reality, are often what we project real fears onto. This is so poignant. These irrational fears are safe. because deep down, we know they aren't going to happen. They are placeholders, a way for us to express the feeling we really want have onto something we know isn't going to happen. When you find yourself in a fear cycle, constantly repeating some strange, random, or unimportant one-off circumstance or situation that has a very low probability of becoming reality, ask yourself if you have any feelings about something related that is actually valid. That fucking hurts, bitch, and it's very true, and God bless you for writing this book. For example, if you get anxious about being a passenger in a car,
I do.
Consider if your I know you had an incident, but consider if your fear is of moving forward or being out of control. Or if you're anxious about being fired from your job, the fear might really be the idea that you aren't worthy of another job or being humiliated by a higher up. All right, guys. That's just it's so good. Go to my Patreon and hear me read the rest of this chapter with hilarious commentary. It's a way to support the show. And rate and review us on iTunes or Apple, wherever you listen to this.
And Spotify.
Spotify, all of it. Please. All the ratings, the high ratings.
And listen also, before we get out, on YouTube, now that we're there, please engage. Leave some comments. If Christina's hair looks good, if my beard looks good,
yeah,
if we have a good point, just say something.
We've been through a lot in our lives. Tell us some nice stuff. Spread the love.
It's all healing.
Subscribe to the YouTube channel.
Yes.
Comment, like, subscribe, smash, all that stuff. It's a free way to help the show. And it really, really helps because I believe the message we're getting out of the world is a really good one. Okay? All right. I love you guys so much. Congrats on not killing yourselves. I will talk to you next Monday.